And we're back, and you are listening to VillainCast, BJJ Antiheroes, with myself, Chris the Villain Pains, and Naki El Jefe Arshed. And welcome to Reap the Week. But first, a quick thank you to our members at In Theory BJJ, Concept Driven Jiu-Jitsu, for fight commentary, technique and concept videos, private coaching, monthly webinars and Q&A sessions, please visit www.patreon.com/intheorybjj. So, Nak, this is going to be a fuck about and find out. You're feeling ill and Riverside are not playing ball. So,
yeah, it should be fun. Let's do it. Better. I'm better. I'm better. Let's go.
We did one last week, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm sure we did.
Yeah, we did, because I missed you. Because, yeah, we tried the week before and it all went wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
I think what's confusing me right now is that because we're playing so much Helldivers together and I'm sitting in front of this same screen with headphones on talking to you, that I forget what is a podcast and what is this, us just talking.
Yeah, to be fair, we talk more shit on the Helldivers. I swear a lot on there.
Dude, well, I'm putting it out there now. If anyone's listened to this and is playing Helldivers 2, contact us. Come and get our friend code. We can have some games together. Because I think, well, I definitely suck at it. So if you want to watch me suck at something terribly, that sounds awful. I don't mean in that way. Watch me suck something terribly. Nah?
You make it sound weird.
Oh, okay, yeah, I made it sound really weird.
I ran away.
He ran away. Like, no, he's not. Yeah, he can suck things on his own. Oh my god. I mean, I was having a good think about it today. I was trying to figure out why. What makes it like so enjoyable compared to other things? I think it unlocks like the part of you, like, especially being like a, I don't know, my class is middle-aged yet? Close to middle-aged? Late 30s?
Mm.
That feeling of when you're a kid and you're like, you're playing outside with your friends and like a new, like I'm talking like maybe 10 years old, and then a new group of friends like joins you, and you don't know those people, but you end up having like some games together and talking and like chatting shit, and then like at the end of it, like, I have to go now, this is really fun, we had a good game, guys, I'll see you later. It reminded me of that, like you have these random people jump in with you, you have a great time, and like you end up just talking, you know, almost like in the jiu-jitsu way, just like superficial, and then
agreed.
And then at the
agreed.
End of it, like, that was really fun, but I have to go now, like, thank you, bye. You're like, oh
yeah, it's a good game, man, it's a good concept.
I haven't had that kind of interaction with people, not to that level, in, you know, 27 years. I guess jiu-jitsu does,
because all the,
take you there in a way.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the more addicting facets of jiu-jitsu, and oddly enough, that was a slight segue. Like, that was planned. That wasn't me just riffing. Like, maybe it was a little bit. But that was planned a little bit, because one of the questions this week is, so the Jimmy's mailbag has been out again.
It's just the name.
Jimmy's mailbag. So I did put Jimmy's mailbag out there, and one of the questions we had back was on signs that you're training at a McDojo. Biggest signs you're training at a McDojo. And that made me ponder then about just general jiu-jitsu things and why we train sometimes at certain gyms. So I'll leave it open to you to begin with, Nak. What do you think? Because, okay, wait there. Wait. How many martial arts gyms have you been to prior to jiu-jitsu?
I mean, I did like 2 days of karate when I was about 14, maybe 13, something like that. I didn't know, obviously, it was McDojo. Then it just didn't seem real to me because I was already fighting on the streets at that age. So I was like, nah, I'm going to get my head kicked in if my hands are this low. What else have I done? Yeah, and the rest was just like rugby and shit. So martial arts-wise, and then I started boxing. Did a bit of boxing when I was about 17, 18. So I did. They've kind of, most boxing gyms have got a kind of a, because the sport is that old, they all kind of do a similar kind of thing. So, you know, it works. But no, jiu-jitsu-wise, I'm not going to say any names, but I went, and I heard of a few local ones. Well, there weren't that many then anyway. And it's just how the coaches were treating certain people of a certain skin color and how they would treat them and treat others and how you wouldn't get attention. So I haven't experienced much of McDojo stuff. All I hear is like other people's experiences. But personally, if I feel something's not right, I just walk away. I haven't got the time or energy to. Well, I didn't anyway when I was young. And I'm still young, by the way.
yeah, you are still young. That, like you're like the athletic prodigy, and I'm like the old master now in the gym. I'm living vicariously through you. Well, actually, it was through. So there is a website. There was a website. There is a website. It's been running around now for many years called Bullshido. And that's mm-hmm. where one of the first places I ever came across grappling, and it kind of made me interested in grappling in the first place, about trying out Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because it was talked about a lot on there, because Bushido came about for calling out nonsense martial arts. And especially in the world where, you know, the UFC has been around now since, you know, the early 90s, and MMA has been growing in that way ever since. That we kind of settled the discussion on what is effective long ago. And it's only through very tenuous grips now that certain places still exist. Like, oh yeah, we can't use this stuff in the UFC. Like, we don't train for the cage because in the cage there's a referee and there's rules. And right. But I still think that trying out your shit is kind of important. So I guess it then comes down to the idea of what is a McDojo and what is Bushido? What's the difference and what does each term mean? I mean, Bushido would be, I guess, like nonsense martial arts, like the whole dim mac, like
defense lab.
Yes. Defense lab. But yeah, like the idea of, like, you know, pressure points and touching someone and doing things that just would not work in a fight.
Touching someone.
Yeah, like, you know, like the death touch kind of thing. Like, you know, I touch you, you know, 5-point palm exploding heart technique and whatever.
Or not touching him with the whole chi thing. Exactly. Fuck me, that's crazy that is.
Oh, dude, like yellow bamboo, I think it was called, or something like that.
Hadouken, that should stay in Street Fighter.
But I think then it's like, well, if that's Bushido, I think, because the terms can almost be used interchangeably, is then that you have to come across like, well, we know what a nonsense martial art is, but what then is a McDojo? And I think that then you got to think that that's more in the line of franchised something. Like, the idea is that, you know, you go to a McDonald's anywhere and it's the same McDonald's. Which, you think that's kind of a crazy idea, is that you go and...
I like where this analogy is going.
I'm not saying a word.
Neither am I. I just... it's going somewhere.
I'm not saying a word, Nack. Yet, but I'll let people figure out their own stuff. We're going to go a bit deeper into this. Actually, I'm feeling spicy. the idea of a McDojo is something that's franchised, and you can, no matter how many where you go, you get the same product. Muck something, should I say? Like, you know, you have a.
So, for example, for example, would you say that? If you're being graded based on not your skill but your attendance, would you say that would constitute a McDojo criteria?
Well, I think that's the thing. It's you know, going a bit further than that is, I mean, we had this conversation recently. I think one of the lads at the gym and I is that I think with the skyrocketing popularity of BJJ. And that people want to grow their gyms, and it's becoming a, you know, viable income in a big way. Like, you know, some gyms can make an awful lot of money. But when you start getting bigger premises and you're taking on a lot of staff and this, that, and the other, then, you know, you need students to pay for that. And, you know, when you look at the muck model, shall we say, of like McDonald's, as in, you know, you type in McDonald's, you know what you're walking into. It's going to have the same computer screen things. Everyone's wearing the same uniform. You know, the same stuff's on sale. It tastes the same. It costs very similar.
The same hygiene problems. Did you hear about them rats recently in Stoke?
I didn't, no. Oh, no, I think...
No.
There was
a Mackey's in Stoke where they found rats and flipping rat droppings and shit, so they had to shut the Mackey's down for a bit.
Well...
I know, man.
I'm sure there's a metaphor in there somewhere. But it means that, because then you've got that whole, like, you know, if you own a McDonald's, you're going to get business because the name is so ubiquitous in fast food that when people are hungry, they go, oh, let's just find local McDonald's. And so you're automatically going to get business from that. Which when you're a business owner and you're someone who wants to make money, that's important. So you make this franchise. So, you know, taking... load of these things together. If you're just going purely off the McDonald's model, are there places that have a synonymous kind of name with jiu-jitsu that, you know, people could construe as, you know, you think fast food McDonald's, you think jiu-jitsu, you think this name. And if you go under this name, you're going to get a product which is the same. It's going to look the same inside. Everyone's in the same uniforms as every other one of these franchises. Cost is quite similar.
Overinflated cost.
Take that as you will. I don't have to say any more. So I think that's a big side. But I think if they want to go into like the wider, you know, McDojo-y things, I think that idea that you can then end up watering down what you do to try and catch a wider audience. I think that's kind of like, you know, I remember, you know, coming into jiu-jitsu 15 years ago now, and it looked like an English Defence League rally. It looked like a Nazi rally half the time. You go to a competition and it's just white skinheads everywhere. And you're like, well, I don't feel comfortable here. Like, I'm pretty sure, maybe that's just a British Northern thing at the time, but I'm pretty sure having any sort of pigment in your skin would make you feel very uncomfortable in that room. Like, just being mildly tanned, like you've been outside. Like, it did not feel good. And, you know, I think that was just more of a thug culture kind of thing, maybe. It was a specific uniform they had. I guess, you know, I think it's the idea that you have this marketing, like, you know, jiu-jitsu's for everyone. No, it isn't. We can make it for everyone. We can advertise it to everyone. We can make everyone feel welcome. That's not a problem. But you have to be a certain kind of nutter to do it properly.
Yeah, agreed. We talked about this, I think, last week as well, didn't we? We touched on it.
Yeah, probably. I think we talked about it a few times. Like, you just kind of know when someone walks in, like, oh, this person's unhinged. Yeah. They're going to be here forever. But then that depends how much you water it down. Which I guess if you're not doing sparring, that's a flag. Wasn't there a story? Must be over 10 years old now, that Vinnie Magalhaes was on about or something. It might have been Vinnie Magalhaes. I might be conflating two stories together here. But check it out. Jamie, check it out. There's no one there. of coaches coming up from South America. Not very good, like maybe purple belts or brown belts, being given their black belts, given clubs, and then playing a franchise fee back, but because they're considered like a specialist, that's what their visa was based on. And if they rock the boat in any way, they could have their black belt rescinded, and that would then rescind their work visa, and they'd get deported. And so they'll just run these clubs.
Shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was, I'm pretty sure it was a story that broke.
I wouldn't be surprised though, because yeah, I could imagine somebody coming up with that idea and be like, yeah, I can make money off this and we can control these fuckers.
Oh, completely. I mean, you could send out, you know, a bunch of purple belts, open up a load of gyms, and then say, look, you know, you're only existing now because of the belt we've given you. You pay us a franchise fee for these students that you're getting, or we'll just rescind your black belt and you're no longer a specialist. I mean, that kind of goes...
Man, there's so much emphasis on that black belt, isn't it?
Dude, it does, exactly. As soon as you get it, like, because there's nothing to chase anymore, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Just stick at the game.
Fucking hell.
I think that's one of the interesting things about jiu-jitsu in general, is this idea of mcdojos and dodgy practices, and is that you've got to think still, like, unfortunately... Martial arts has always been such a weird, weird thing, is that you have these people who are sent, you know, prior to jiu-jitsu, prior to, like, pressure testing things, is that, you know, this is one of the first things I remember reading about Bushido back in the day, is that you could be anyone. Like, this is such a crazy idea. You could be, you could have no martial arts experience at all. You could, open up. You could, you know, rent out a village hall, get some mats down or something. Not even mats sometimes, because some of these people don't even like throw each other around. You could go online and download like a very basic syllabus or something from like a club, like a traditional jiu-jitsu, like Japanese jiu-jitsu club, for example, that does like basic standing arm locks and some karate punches. Watch a few YouTube videos on it, open up your own school, put a gi on, buy a black belt, and people would come to you and they would learn and you would make money. No actual skill, no need to prove your skill, no need to be of any sort of coaching qualification. And that always struck me as insane.
Yeah, I get you, but like, I'm glad now that if anything like that does crop up anywhere in the country, like people on the underground. I remember when I started jiu-jitsu, there was loads of them clubs still about. Yeah. And I haven't seen one now in a few years, to be honest. But people go down and what dojo storm it, which, you know, I think it's a good thing in a way, because you can't have that shit. It kills the sport.
But that's mostly in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I mean, like, you know, traditional Japanese martial art jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
That thing still happens. It's like you could very easily. I mean, there's even, you know, out here, there's clubs that are like, have got the weirdest kind of like something pseudo or something. And it's probably completely bonkers, made up stuff. Yet that person's making money from it.
Yeah, because there's a market for it. Remember, we were talking about this the other day as well, weren't we? And like, there's a market, and people are, unfortunately, there are people who still prefer that. Like, for example, Slimming World. Like, if you talk to someone who knows, you know, like a nutritionist or a PT who knows what they're talking about, or these modern day PTs, or, you know, people who know in the industry how to lose weight and how to look after the body and stuff. Like, if they explained the Slimming World concept to someone, like, you'd think, how the hell does this model even work? But then it works, because they have, like, literally, we have on the same night when we train on a Thursday, we'll have probably 20 people, and they'll have like 80 people, literally four times more people. And it doesn't make sense to me.
It's, yeah, and it's, I think you can take a lot of that though, and a lot of those things exist in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, as in, as bonkers all that as those stories are, like Slim World, you know, these kind of weight loss clubs, or made up martial arts, and you can, you know, you could call yourself a third Dan. I'm just a third Dan in my own martial art, and that's how insane that regular martial arts is that you could very easily develop your own martial art, give it a certain name, and put a black belt around yourself. Say, I'm a third Dan in this martial art, and that's it. Like, okay, cool, people will then come to you. And that's like, there's a
yes,
again, I don't want to use names necessarily, just because, you know, saying these things out loud, I don't want it to lead like slander or libel or anything like that. But there's a Australian karate brand that were kind of famous, because what they do is the way they spread was that you could go in, you know, very similar to this like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu stories. You could come in and learn from someone at one of these dojos. They, you know, you get to your first belt within 3 months or whatever it is. They then turn around to you and say that you've got potential, kid. We're going to give you a black and white belt. That means you're a junior coach. We'll then help you open up your own gym in another part of town. Do some door knocking, cold calling, and leafleting in the area. Get kids coming to your school. You pay us a percentage of what you make back to this gym because you're a student coach from this gym. But you then keep, you know, 50-60% or whatever their number would be. And so you could be going to a karate gym where the person teaching you has 3 months more experience than you actually have stepping on for the first time. And that's how they became so prevalent. I mean, in Stafford alone, I mean, this has been a few years back now, like probably 5 years ago, there were 8 of them under this one brand.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And you think, so you got an...
It was everywhere in the Midlands. Everywhere in the Midlands, all over, man. You'd see advertisements everywhere.
They're all over the UK, all over Australia, New Zealand. I think they might have made it to America. But you'd be making, like...
Yeah, it was mad, man.
These
like
area
you go,
managers.
If you were looking online for jobs, that was, like, always number one looking, like... to apply for a job, and what used to come up. Yeah, I remember.
I think something like the area managers would be on something close to like 100K or something. It was utterly insane how much money they could
crazy
make.
Crazy salary.
I mean, I saw some of the pictures of some of the local clubs, and there's like 30, 40 kids on the mats, all paying their fees. But then, like I said, a lot of those things you can carry on to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is that, you know, most of us who are coaching, etc., we're only there because we're black belts, and we're only black belts just because we beat up a bunch of people once and got given a black belt by another person who just beat up a lot of people once and got given a black belt. That's literally it. We don't have any. I mean, a lot of us go out to go, you know, to improve ourselves, get safeguarding courses, go get coaching qualifications, health and safety qualifications, etc. But that's not necessarily needed or anything when it comes to doing jiu-jitsu or being a black belt.
Agreed.
And that's
bonkers.
Is that you know, exists in martial arts. I can't even wrap my head around it sometimes. And then people wonder why there's so many issues within martial arts when it comes to bad coaching practices or, you know, coaches being monsters and stuff like that. You think, well, this person's only there because they were someone who just opened up a small club one day, got a few people involved, and they're just someone who just played this game longer than the other people in the room. That's it. Like, that is all. Becoming very aware of that issue. And I say, we're not terribly removed from these insane... traditional martial arts that are still very prevalent, and a lot of those issues do carry over. Signs it in a McDojo. Depends if it's Bullshido or McDojo. Are you allowed to spar? do you get your ass kicked when you go to other gyms? That's never a good sign. Are you allowed to train at other gyms? Sometimes you're not. There was a story, wasn't there, recently of someone training at a different gym, and I think they got kicked out of their own gym. Oh no, they said something. That was it. There was a certain franchise of jiu-jitsu, one of their students posted something on their own social media, not about jiu-jitsu at all, just like a post, might have been slightly sexually explicit in a humorous way kind of thing, but their gym then said to him, like, sent him a letter saying take it down.
Sent him a letter? Who sends a letter in 2024?
Like an email or something.
Don't know what emails.
Or like a cease and desist. Like, you know, you're giving the club a bad name because of your social media presence.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if you were like that or me, Chris? Oh. Fucking hell.
Wait. That kind of happened, but just because you were pissing people off on social media and then they started calling me saying, can your students stop harassing me, please? I was like, dick. And what makes you think I've got any control over them? If they want to be clowns and just come harass you for being a douchebag yourself, like,
because you teach shit, bro.
I'm like, what makes you think I've got any control over them? Like, I'm literally their friend who just shows them some cool shit. Well, that's it, really. That's about as far as that goes. But he avoids me still. Actively avoids me. Anyway.
Do you blame him?
No, I guess I don't. Context. This clown, again, I don't want to say company or business names because I'm learning that saying nasty things about people could lead to legal problems. Not that anything's happened.
I don't give a fuck.
Okay, be on you then. So this clown, he runs a martial arts club, and the way they actually get it is the way they get their franchise is they go to a 3-day course in Spain. It might still be in Spain, it might not be. You pay X amount of money, you get a franchise area. I think it's like a 12-mile radius from where you point your gym. Like, no one can open up a gym around you. You do a 2-day course learning the art, and then 1-day course learning marketing. And then you're sent off to open your club, and you pay a fee back to your back to the franchise. And they do weird shit. Like, I remember when I had to sit on the phone for like 2 hours listening to his nonsense, saying like, "Yeah, but Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is not like a real, it's not realistic. I mean, we train in the dark. Like, we'll turn the lights off and like surprise each other."
But we don't do the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He didn't understand that point. It's like, bruv, like, that's just a rule set we play in. We do not do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Yeah. We'll fuck you up.
Yeah, I know. But he's like, yeah, but you wouldn't be able to fight us in the dark because we're trained to fight in the dark. I'm like...
We were born in the dark.
Yeah, because their main selling point is it's the fighting art of Batman. I'm like...
see how I link that up.
Batman's not real. Like... It's not a real person.
I'm Batman.
I'm like, but it's what Batman uses. I'm like, great. Like,
I'm Batman.
I'm not sure how much real world combat experience he has.
Oh, man. I believe he's a personal trainer, by the way, now.
He's been a personal trainer now for, I think, 15 years. And I think he got...
Shit!
He's been kicked out of... until he opened up his own place, he was kicked out of every other gym he ever PT'd at. Because what he was doing I know because I actually was friends with one of the gyms he did it to. Is what he'd do is he'd get his own. He was given PTs as part of working there, as you do if you're a PT employed by a business. He would then, I think he was charging like £60 an hour.
Oh my God!
And then what would happen? Oh, mate. What would happen? I think like for some strange reason, and what he'd do is he'd then like. Get the he'd take them away from the business, as it say, so to speak, and then just do them privately instead. It's like, oh yeah, cancel your thing. What you're doing with there, like just do it with me personally.
This gets funnier.
And charge him £60 for that session. And when the gym then cottoned on to, he'd lost like a bunch of clients at the gym, but was still teaching them and making it a personal level. And they went, no, you can get out. But he did that to about 4 gyms. Pretty much every gym in Stafford he burnt at some point.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a bit of a insufferable tool. And you brought him to my doorstep because you kept on harassing him, saying what you're doing.
I didn't know who he was. I didn't know who he was at the time. I just thought, mate, like, how are you pulling in numbers when we're struggling? Like, I don't get it.
Our rent's low and I'm happy. That's the thing. I'm happy living small. Like, I'd rather keep it tight. I'd rather keep the style that we do alive and not lower it just to make more money, because I don't make anything from the gym. I'm there because I just love the game And I'm happy with the rent. You know, the rent's low and everyone's happy. I'm like, cool. I don't need to make it bigger.
Yeah.
This is cool. Like, why do we need to grow? We're all having a great time. If people want to come do it, great. If they don't, we'll still have a great time.
Yeah.
I think we can...
We spent a lot of time on that McDodo question.
I was going to say, that was a loaded question. On a slightly similar note, troll question of the day. What would it take for you to train at Gracie Baja? Thank you. You know who you did. You know who this was.
I can already imagine who this is.
Yeah. So, why? I don't get it. I have trained at Gracie Bar recently in the past
six months.
Because one of our friends
I give privacy to Gracie Baja people. I don't mind.
No, it's just... So, it's separating out the practice of the franchise from the people. I mean, if the people are like Kool-Aid drinkers, then yeah, sorry, I'm going to have problems. But like, you know, if it's just normal jiu-jitsu people who want to roll, that's cool. But it's the franchise that gives me a problem.
Yeah.
And the practices. I mean, even like going down to visit our good friend Taz and like being told like, oh yeah, you can come train, yada yada, it's great. But you have to wear the uniform. I'm like, I'm just in a white gi. And I'm like, dude. I'm like, yeah, sorry. Rules. You gotta wear the shield. I'm like, that's a bit okay, fine. But it's that kind of does that have to happen? Do you have to have a gi quota that you have to sell? Can't we just do jiu-jitsu, please? I didn't buy one, obviously. I just rented one, but still, the fact that that's a model, maybe that leads into the last question. So I would go train at one of these things. I'd go there because it's where my friends are. I wouldn't go there necessarily to go learn anything.
It rolls in it, like, yeah, I get you, yeah, 100%. You just want to roll.
Yeah.
But that's all we care about.
I just want to roll with my friends. If my friends happen to be in that place, then that's cool, as long as it's got some mats on the floor and they aren't too silly with me. Cool, that's great. That's all I need. But like, even, I tried to go train at a Baja. I had a free night, you know, we don't do anything Tuesday, Wednesdays. So I tried to go train at another local Gracie Baja. I emailed them saying, look, you know, what time is your open mat? Your class, do you mind if I come down? Yeah, I think it was a beginner class that night. And they went, yeah, you're more than welcome to come in. We started this time, like, cool, by the way, I'm a black belt. Oh, well, you didn't tell me that. I don't think you're welcome anymore. I'm like, okay, cool.
Man, can you remember when obviously you went to black belt, and obviously we had no other black belts in the gym? We used to be like Christmas for us when we had a black belt coming through. We were like, oh yes, we can roll with a black belt. Like, can you remember when Camille came? We were so fucking excited. Like, Camille fucking from Poland, Camille Uminski,
yeah,
fucking Polish ADCC level competitors coming to our gym to roll with us, and we're just measly purple and blue belts.
That was great. I loved it. I love that kind of stuff. Like, I want to train with as many cool people as I can. But yeah, that, and then that happens. And I'm like, dude, I just wanted somewhere to come train. It was pretty local. It'd be like a 45-minute drive. I've got a free evening. Why don't I just come down? No. Sorry, I don't think you'd be welcome here anymore. Okay, cool. Thanks. It's a bit of a dick move. I was fine one email ago. Nonsense. That's what it is. It's nonsense.
Agreed.
Oh. Okay, this is actually more one for you. Opinion on cradles from bottom position / guard. I'm not sure how to take...
I mean...
I know.
In terms of defending them or not getting caught in them.
I don't know how to take it. Opinion on cradles, like doing a cradle from the bottom, which I think I wouldn't understand how you do that and it'd be successful.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think.
Or how...
A triangle would be an example of a cradle.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Like holding their leg and like... I guess like, yeah, when you do a triangle, when you hold their leg and you turn sideways, I guess that's technically a cradle.
Yeah, like cradle. Anytime you can cradle anyone, top or bottom, do it.
Yeah. But I think the idea of cradling someone from, I mean, I guess you could like grab a head and arm and do like a bridge or something to roll someone over.
Yeah, yeah. Posture break, isn't it? Cradle's all about posture breaking.
Tying someone's head to their knees is a good posture break. I think the problem is that it's very strength-based if you're on the bottom trying to do it. I wouldn't want to be there. I wouldn't consider it necessarily a game plan. Like, I wouldn't put it in my repertoire of moves. It more be a Hail Mary to get out of a bad situation. But I think if you look at the question the other way of opinion on cradles as the person had it done to them, I'm like, yeah, they suck. Like, I'll give you a quick answer on that one. I don't like it.
Well, it's simple, isn't it? You've got to keep your head away from your legs. Yeah. Like, if you're going to curl up, then there's a cradle coming. Like, a lot of people get cradled in, like, half guard because they'll be a half guard or Zed or knee shield and they'll, like, go hunting for the leg or something and just pause. You're going to get cradled and then you're going to suffer.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, yeah, it's a posture break, I think. And it also compresses your diaphragm and, you know, it sucks while you're down there. And so that's...
Yeah, you're getting cooked.
That's my answer to that question. You know, how I feel, I guess, as the person on the bottom. Don't like it. Like, for very good reasons.
Yeah.
Next question. Oh, yeah. So last week, I did a video on the bone collector. You know, the heel hook setup from Running Man. Where you just step backwards a little bit and you can take a heel hook pretty easily.
Yeah.
So I've had a question on that. What fun things can I do after the bone collector?
So side control where you step backwards.
When
and
you're
you,
in Running Man.
What you showed the other day.
Sorry, I might have not said that right. When you're in Running Man and like your top leg, you can hook back around to theirs and pull them into like an ashy.
Yes.
Yes. And then it's called the bone collector. Like I've been doing it for ages. I've probably hit on you like a couple of times at least. Until you don't
yes,
put your legs
yes, yes, I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, I think I saw a video on it. I think it's called The Bone Collector. And I was like, oh, damn, it's real. So I did a video on it. And I put it on In Theory. And everyone fucking loved it. Like, it's got the most comments I've, like, pretty much had. And, like, you know, like, messages back saying, oh, my God, I need to try this. And, like, I give you guys conceptual stuff which means so much to me that I feel would really help you. Like... You know, postural.
I mean, cool stuff.
And fundamentals. I showed the bone collector. It's like, oh my god, gold. I'm like, really? Oh,
it's you enter into single leg X, don't you? Or X?
Yeah, like yeah, into an ashy,
So quite simply, yeah, literally, you go back to the single leg X system. So you got get ups, you got sweeps, you got entries into outside the heel hooks, all sorts.
I think I need to do a video on like things that we can do after it because like. Especially leg, because I've got a couple of questions on leg lock stuff as well. I'm going to go do a webinar this weekend on leg stuff, maybe, or I'm going to put the poll out. But I feel like recording it now in front of Raul, I'd be embarrassed.
Like, yeah, he's fucking genius.
Like showing leg stuff, I'd be like, don't look at me, Raul. Like, so Raul's been on this podcast for Raul Haldu from Amsterdam, and the guy's a leg lock wizard. Like, he's the guy who... He submitted, like, what was it? It was a brown belt. He submitted, like, 5 black belts in competition with just...
Yeah, from turtle.
Just turtle heel hooks. Luckily, I don't think Raul has leg locked me now in probably about 2 or 3 years. Luckily. So, please, I understand fundamentals. If I can stop that leg locking bastard, I can stop most people. Yeah, but I'd feel embarrassed showing leg locks in front of him. Like, my fundamental understanding of leg positioning kills his game enough that he can't ever find one on me. But I feel that my technical knowledge of completing them, it's not to his standard. Like, his setups as well, like, oh, Lord. Oh, dude, you weren't there Monday because you were poorly. He's taken... The technique he was showing, like me and Adam just looked at each other and it's like, it's just a high knee version of bladed guard.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just bladed guard. And I was like, we looked at each other like, oh my God, he's heel hooking people from bladed guard. Oh no. So that's the next, I put bladed guard on In Theory as well. But that's the next thing, is that heel hooking people from bladed. I'm like, oh my God, like that has to be put out there. You did say like
Oh, he looks... Yeah, Bladed God is sick for he looks like. On Sunday, I was just spamming him.
Dude, isn't it just... I was... Yeah. Oh, but what I should have to show you, like, if you're, are you down tomorrow?
Yeah, the way I'm feeling, I think I am. Yeah.
Well, we'll go through it with Raul, because you'll see it and you'll be like, oh my God, it is. And like, it's like a slight top foot modification, like you have to put your top foot elsewhere. But it's like, it's a joiner between, halfway between Kindle, halfway between Bladed, and you get heel hooks on it. It's what Raul plays all the time. I'm like, oh my God, I finally get it. So, yes, that's awesome. Hopefully if we do like a little podcast tomorrow, you can do a little fun thing from it. Oh my God, we've been talking for ages. It's been great.
It's 40 minutes, yeah.
Last question. Should guard pulls... Oh no, a couple of last questions. Should guard pulls be disincentivized in competitions? As in...
You lose
a couple of points or an advantage.
Yes, yes. You've got to be wrestle. You have to wrestle. I understand why it exists, but mate, like, it's embarrassing for grown men to just sit on their arse without even doing anything. Like, earn it. Like, I guess if you're in a nice clinch or something, yeah, because you can pull people onto you. It's I would say if you are in a clinch or if you like get a single leg, you can pull guard to enter legs. I think that's legitimate. But just slapping hands as soon as the match starts and just sitting on your arse, scooting towards someone, like. My brain can't fathom that. I don't know why. I've tried really hard to understand it. I understand why it exists and the reason why people do it, but it needs to go. It needs to. I think they need to. Like you say, they have to like find a way to. Like ADCC, I think, got a good way of, or they're trying to get rid of it, but yeah, it's not.
I think
that's me though.
I think I remember reading something ages ago, and actually, I think this is even better. Like. Because I think that, you know, the original idea of the points, from a biased jiu-jitsu perspective, was like an allegory for strikes. Because obviously, you know, you take someone down to world jiu-jitsu, 2 points, but then you have to get past their legs because they can up-kick you, that's worth 3 points. And then you go through a hierarchy of positions where you can punch people more and more. Obviously, this is the early, very early days of MMA and Vale Tudo, but that was the general idea of it. And so, you know, being in guard wasn't necessarily a great thing because obviously you're now down. It was worth 2 points to put someone on the floor so you could like do better strikes on them. But people could still upkick, like the legs are still dangerous. That's why a guard pass is worth more. And so I think as a way of disincentivizing guard, I think everyone just gets a free slap as soon as it starts, like at any point in the round, you can just really well slap someone in the face. I think fuck points. Like that would kill guard pass, kill guard pulling in a second.
Should let him like either uppercut him or flying knee him in the face or something.
Just like just a really like because you know from being the top person, like if you can like get in someone's guard, like their close guard or something, and just suddenly just whack someone in the face, like. You know,
I might go for a flying knee slice or something and then accidentally be like, whoops, I meant to go across, but I went straight in the middle. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just like a free strike. I think a slap, because I think whenever we've played slaps in the gym, that's always been more demoralizing. Just getting slapped in the face.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think that would sense, like, because that leans into the reason why the point system kind of exists, as in it was for Bay. You know, if we had strikes, this would make more sense. That's why you don't get any points for side control because you can't really hit someone properly, but you do get more for knee on belly and mount because it's a stable base to strike from. But then obviously MMA has changed since then. The points haven't changed with it and we know more about striking from the top. But that's why I think that if you are a disincentivized guard, just slap him. Just slap him really hard once. And I think you'd kill a lot of guard, like especially because you only have one. Like only one slap, but it's pristine, you can go full ball, load up on that bitch, like power slap. Like,
yeah.
At any point in the match, like in the next 6 minutes, I can slap you as hard as I want in the face. Like, let's see how many people pull guard. Because when you know that when you're down,
that'd be so funny to watch. Like,
I don't want it to be now.
That'd be so funny to watch. Yeah.
Oh, dude, I think that would sort guard out like that. Not to the face, you know, you have to hit him around the side of the face and the cheek. But yeah, one almighty slap. That'd fix Gar. It'd make you feel like, especially because, like, you know, whenever we've played, you know, striking with grappling, you don't want to be on the bottom at all, ever. It sucks.
Yeah.
And if you knew that that one horrendous slap was coming, your guard would completely change. You wouldn't play as open, frilly guard. You'd be straight in there, hand fighting, and realize that, shit, I don't want to be down here. I want to be back up on top. That's how we fix jiu-jitsu.
Agreed.
One big slap.
Yep.
last question. Training, it was a question of, like, how do you train with, like, when you had a really bad big toe injury? But I think you can then open that up to how do you train in general with injuries?
Injuries, I think it might be a cliche now because everybody says a similar thing, but I've experienced it a few times. Like, it gives you an opportunity to do and try things which you wouldn't usually do. Like, you know, wrist injury. Let's say you have your dominant hand, right hand, you have a wrist injury. You know, you're going to start now framing more with your left hand if you're not usually used to doing it. Toe injuries, again, if you've got foot injuries, you're probably a wrestler or something, but you don't play guard, but now you want to train, so you're forced to play guard, but you're also developing a skill which you probably wouldn't have ever developed if you didn't hit your foot, or if you know. So yeah, that's the way I see it. When I injure something, and as soon as I want to come on the back on the mats, I'll go and try things which I don't usually play, which will mean my injury is still safe. And I can still train. And for the love of God, I keep saying this to the people in the gym as well, especially the newbies who are getting injured and they've got the bug because they want to train, is strap the fuckers up. If you've got an ankle injury, wrist injury, finger injury, you know, you want to train, but strap it up so it doesn't go to the point where you're hyperextending it again and you keep hurting it, because it's not going to fix. Like, you might feel better, but yes, the moment that joint hyperextends a little bit or a little bit of pressure on it, you're back to square one. So that's what how I see training when you're injured and when you're trying to get back.
One thing we used to do, my personal view on this, from back when we used to have to learn, you know, medical stuff as being a firefighter, one thing that they were kind of like going towards eventually when you went to car accidents. I mean, initially the idea was, you know, you get to a car accident, you put a neck brace on someone to, hold their neck steady while you then extricate them from the car. And then, a lot of the training we then went through was this idea that you don't put a neck brace on them, just because as a human being, when you're injured, you'll naturally go to a position that rests and looks after that injury point. Like, you know you hurt your shoulder, you're trying to support your arm.
Yeah.
And so if you hurt your neck in an accident, you're naturally trying to, like, go to a position that will stabilize your neck. And then having some big fuck who, you know, comes in and grabs you by the head and tries to position you in the point to put a brace on, that is kind of sometimes a lot more detrimental. And so kind of taking that idea is that wherever you've injured, you know your body best and you know which part hurts more. And tell your partner, like, look, you know, I've got an injury site here. And again, like, this idea of jiu-jitsu is that we go because we want to have fun with our friends. And if you try, you know, if people are in the gym who are there and they can't, you know, they want to train hard no matter how injured you are, something like that, that's just a person that shouldn't be in the gym anyway. I don't think they get the point of this. Is that it's a game, for fuck's sake. It's a game between consenting adults of an evening after work. Like, chill the fuck out. And so if I go in, like, a busted wrist or anything like that, I'm like, cool, well, this is my wrist. I'm going to put my wrist in a position that suits me best. I'm going to roll in a way that makes it so I don't hurt my wrist. If I suddenly lose because someone armbars my other arm, I can't save it with my wrist. I'm like, cool, do I even care? Has that now made me drop a belt? No. Like, I'm just playing a game. I mean, it reminds me of, in the climbing documentary, Dawn Wall, there was the guy climbing at Tommy Caldwell. When he was younger, he was obviously a gifted climber, but he lost part of his finger, like a really important part of your finger for climbing. And they said, like, you know, you could never climb the same way again, but he adapted around it. And I like to look at it the same way. Like, you know, you adapt your way to whatever you need to do to carry on. And if you're injured, like if you're too badly injured that you can't do anything, then don't train. But if you, like, you know, if you busted your wrist or, you know, hyperextended your elbow, busted your shoulder, like, cool, just strap it up. Strap in a way that you feel comfortable for your body. Tell your partners, look, I busted my shoulder. Can we just, you know, we'll play and I'm going to try and support it. Don't you try and help it because I know how my body feels. Just, you know, go to my level, feel how I'm feeling. And if I look like I'm in pain, chill the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah, it adds on to my point because a lot of them, like, who have got little niggles now, because they're so excited, they'll forget to tell you, and then you're rolling about and say, oh, I've heard this. I'm like, damn, I told you, just like, you know, if you forgot to tell, if you've got a strap on or something, or if it's a little bit, you know, if it's visible to see that you are injured there, like, I'm not gonna go near it, like, or I'm not going to put extra strength or pressure on it. But yeah, you're right. It's, you just adapt, don't you? You find ways, your body naturally find ways to do things and adapt. Where, yeah, it's. I think it's a little part of skill. I think it's a skill in itself, to be fair.
I think there's a good point to be made as well. Like, fuck people who don't mention shit beforehand, and when they lose, they go, "Oh yeah, but I've got a messed up shoulder." Like, dude. Like, why you say that earlier?
Yeah,
like, don't make excuses. Like, or like they'll go ham, like, you know, hard as a motherfucker until they lose. And like, I've got a fucked up shoulder. Like, then why are you going ham? And B, why are you telling me now? Like, we're supposed to be just playing a goddamn game. Like, if you injure,
that sounds like an excuse.
Yeah, exactly. Don't make excuses. Like, it's especially when you're here in competition as well. Like, everyone's got niggles when they go into competition. But if you're too injured to fight properly, don't go in. But, like, I think it was it Gal Vau who, like, when he lost to Gordon, suddenly came out of every excuse under the sun. And it's just like, dude, shut up. You're kind of ruining your fucking thing now. Yeah. Again, it's supposed to be a game. And if you're injured, find the way it supports it and just play.
Be smart. Play.
Tell your friends beforehand and don't go hard as a motherfucker. And if they suddenly go really hard and you just tap early, cool, great. You're being a dick and I don't feel safe doing this. There is actually one more.
Go on.
But I feel it's more... Well, no, actually, no. You've been doing shit with me for long enough. Question is about photography and video in for gym owners. Or people in gyms, like how do you get photography and video in a gym? I'm like, it's actually one thing I'm really interested in. I'm trying to figure that shit out.
Yeah, I think now, especially with the how social media is nowadays, and how people advertise and how marketing in general works, like, it's not 10, 15 years ago where, you know, you'd design leaflets and it'd all be more paper-based, where now it's all, or even paying for websites and stuff, like, and just get Instagram and Facebook or any kind of modern social media stuff, and you just got to look good. And I think if you, it's an easy way to market if you know and understand how to take good pictures, make good videos. And yeah, whilst being with you and seeing how you're doing it, I think... It's just cool. I think it's part of being a gym owner now, where you've got to have some idea of making good content to advertise your gym.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, what I was saying earlier is I'm happy living small, but also you still need occasionally new people coming in, like, to put more new meat in the grinder. But yeah, one thing, like,
fresh fish.
Exactly. There needs to be fresh meat on the menu. And it's. You know, I'm not artistic at all. I don't have I did not do those things at school. I have no skills in them. But even from a technical standpoint, is most gyms aren't well lit. And when you're trying to take a photo of something that's moving at a relatively interesting speed, in a relatively low light situation, it's going to be difficult. If you try and use a mobile phone, which doesn't really get a lot of light in, it's going to look wank. It's going to look blurry, and that's one of the main things. Like, and that's what's going to put people off from looking at your photos. So invest in a good camera, essentially. One that will let in a lot of light, a DSLR, mirrorless camera, compared to a small sensored mobile phone. And that's what I've kind of been studying over the past 7 or 8 years now, is trying to understand like how to take better portrait photography. I mean, one of the best things as well, for anyone listening who wants to actually get a decent rolling photo or rolling video, don't do it from standing. Like, don't look down on people. You make them look like, I mean, to us as jiu-jitsu people, it even looks kind of silly to us. It looks, don't do that. If you want to take pictures of people rolling, get down to the ground. Because if you take pictures of people from up high, the floor is the background and it's not very interesting. But if you take it from like down at their level, you know, on the ground, looking horizontal, now the rest of the room becomes the background, and that is more interesting. You kind of create that depth of field where they're now the subject, and you've got everything else behind them. That's probably one of the biggest, like, you know, even if you can't get hold of a decent camera, just take things from ground level, please. Like, and if you had, I watched a video yesterday. I was on about photography in low light. That's, you know, because I don't watch any jiu-jitsu videos in my time off. Like, I can't do any more jiu-jitsu. I watch other things, play games. And one of the videos I was watching was about taking photos in low light. And it said, if you can't adjust your shutter speed and you can't adjust your aperture, like the iris of your lens, just take fucking lots. And hopefully one isn't blurry. I was like, that's fair. So yeah, if you
makes
can't
sense.
Get better camera equipment and you can't affect the light, just get down to their level, make them appear bigger, you know, shoot from low down, just take lots and lots of video, lots and lots of photos, and hopefully one will be all right. But I might do like a little video maybe for like the YouTube channel or the maybe Instagram, because that's where most of the photos go. I mean, my photos aren't great, but you know.
Nah, man. Like last Sunday, them pics were quality, even better than the ones you took previously. Like, that was some cool
Thank
shit,
you, man. I am learning. I changed up my setup a little bit. I think the other thing as well, like, and we learned this from doing so many videos over the years. I mean, we've done hundreds of videos now. And the one thing, like, you know, I had good cameras, I had good lenses. I actually had like an okay microphone that was near to us. But the one thing that changes people's perception of quality is audio. Like, that alone, as soon as we put the lapel mics on, like, the main comment I got back was, oh, the production quality is really high now. I'm like, I've literally just put the microphone on my shirt. That's it. Nothing else has changed. Yeah, audio. And if you can figure out audio, like, even if you're doing it on a mobile phone, don't just take the mobile phone audio. Like, just get a lapel mic, a radio mic or something, or a shotgun mic really close. It's the audio that's going to make your footage look better, weirdly. that's, and you know, you go through, like, I was on a video, you know, YouTubing earlier, and an advert came up recorded by someone, you know, who used terrible audio equipment, and you can feel the drop in quality, and I instantly just did not give a shit about what they were saying. I was like, as if that's it. And you can hear when we
100%.
Do podcasts, like the drop off rate of when we do a crap audio session, like, people just don't care. Like,
it's like a film, man. Like, when you're watching your film and there's loads of background music and you cannot understand what they're saying, you just lose interest. You're like, what the hell, man?
Well, especially that kind of stuff, when you, like, it trips up so many copyright filters that now exist on video platforms. Like, if you're, you know, recording with songs in the background half the time, like, that's why, you know, because so we're, we use a GoPro. Like, Naki knows this. I'm saying this to the podcast people. We use a GoPro to record all our rolling footage. It's on pretty much every session that I can get around to it, that I don't just suddenly jump in on the mats. I set up a GoPro because GoPro will stream directly to YouTube, like, via the Wi-Fi. And so if I use my phone's hotspot, I can GoPro directly to YouTube, bypassing my phone, essentially. Because especially after like a 1 hour, 2 hour rolling session in HD, the size of that file to upload would be bonkers. But being able to live stream it to YouTube, by the time I click finish, it's kind of ready. It means people can go back. They can, you know, if something cool happened, I say something cool happened. It's mostly just, did you torture someone that night? Can we make a gif out of it? But the main thing that was always tripping up is that we, you know, we have music on when we're rolling. And as soon as it hit YouTube, it would set off their copyright filters and would kill the video. I'm like, I started to get warnings and stuff. Like, you know, you're breaking copyright and it's, you know, you've got a flag now on your account. I'm like, for God's sake. So I just put like a media mod and a dead electronic microphone on the GoPro that killed the audio. And again, like this, that kind of stuff you wouldn't really think would be a problem. I think I need to make a little video on that.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that. What a weird thing to suddenly do, like a photography video on jiu-jitsu. Oh, I might do that tomorrow. You know, I've got a bit of time in the day. I might actually make one. No, I'm feeling wholesome all of a sudden.
Yeah, do it, man.
let me know if anyone's interested in that. And again, my photos aren't great, but they're better than fucking mobile phone potatoes. Like, holy hell.
Agreed.
Anyway, as said at the beginning of this episode, Naki and I are on Helldivers 2. Send us a message, get our gamer codes, and then if you want to chat to us, like, it's probably the best place to chat to us right now. It's like, you can get like a good... We were on it yesterday for about 5 hours, dude.
If
you want to have a good conversation with Naki and I, join us on there. You can get us for like much longer than any other kind of session. I still send us messages through Discord and everything. We'll get, you know, we'll answer when we see it. But if you want to really talk to us, we're available.
Shooting fucking Terminators and books.
Dude, it's so much fun. We're going to finish this podcast, then we're going to put a different set. I'm going to put a different set of headsets on, headphones. I'm going to talk to you again for another 3 hours. anyway, this has been probably the longest Reap the Week we've done in ages. That was great. I've really enjoyed this. It's been a great week for questions as well. Jimmy has pulled his finger out. I don't know out of what, but he's pulled his finger out this week. His mailbag.
We're going to get banned. We're going to get cancelled.
I'm trying. Like, what do I have to say? Like, I'm really like... Maybe one week. I think... I can't remember what episode it was, but we did have it downvoted a few times 1 week because we said some reprehensible stuff. Yeah. maybe we'll hit it again. But this has been Reap the Week with... myself and Naki, and tune in again next week. Good evening, dude.
Boom, boom.
See you soon.
See you in a bit. See you in a bit.